Linoleum knife.
Welcome,
new podcast of ham. It's about ham. We've changed. We're not a movie podcast anymore. We're no longer a podcast of the cinema.
It's a podcast of pork products.
Podcast of the ham. There's a ham, because, and we're going to talk about it a lot
because it's Easter Sunday,
and there's a ham in the
ham
oven.
Ham is risen.
It's in the oven. The whole. It's like going to be in the oven for the next 4 hours, and it already smells. Like
delicious ham,
serious ham in this whole apartment. And you can enjoy the idea of us enjoying it because you have not been invited over to eat the ham. I'm very sorry. I'm not really sorry.
No.
Because I want all the ham.
Yes, you do.
I don't want anyone else to have my ham.
Anyway, welcome.
Doesn't count as me hitting the microphone.
No, you were adjusting.
I was adjusting the microphone.
Welcome, first-time listeners.
Intentionally,
Dave White hitting the mic.
No, I was intentionally. That was intentional.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
That doesn't help. You're Dave White, film critic for Movies.com.
Oh, yeah. You're Alonzo Duralde. This is a thing we used to do.
Yeah, I just thought
we used to introduce each other.
Yeah.
Like, ladies and gentlemen, my better half.
Well, that way you don't have to be in the awkward position of introducing yourself, you know.
You're Alonzo Duralde of TheRap.com and What the Flick. And
next to me is the gracious Arlene Francis. You know, that sort of thing. This is a podcast of the cinema.
That makes two things in the last hour that you've said that are from
olden times.
Maybe it's from like a 75-year-old person, let's say. Why, you're a regular blah, 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 blah. Yes.
Well, I just...
Grampy.
I just watched on TCM a 1931 Joan Blondell movie called Blondie Johnson. About a woman who is poor in the Depression, and she decides she's had it, and she's going to get money the easy way. And she falls in with some mobsters.
Really?
Yeah.
When did you watch this?
TCM. It was on TiVo.
When did you watch it?
Yesterday, when you were out helping people move and going to art galleries.
Oh, okay.
It was like 70 minutes long. It wasn't great, unfortunately. But Joan Blondell is...
The title's great.
And Joan Blondell is always very watchable. I love her, like, 30s...
Is she fun to watch in this movie? Yeah. Does she make the movie worth looking at for 70 minutes?
Maybe for 40. Maybe for 40 of those minutes.
I like a movie called Blondie Johnson.
You know, I like her tough dames of the 30s. I like her sort of wisecracking sidekicks of the 50s. You know, I'm a fan.
Did you save it?
I did not.
You're never thinking of me. Here I am making a ham for you.
I think of you with some frequency.
I've got a ham in the oven for you.
If I had thought Blondie Johnson was better, I would have saved it for you and been like, oh my God, you have to see Blondie Johnson.
All right.
But it was only okay.
Okay, I trust. So next, I suppose I trust you.
I have a Joan Blondell search in TiVo, I think. So next time comes up that's valid, I will hang on to it for you.
All right.
Nick, it's a Gold Diggers of 1933 or something, you know.
I've seen that.
Okay, well, something else, but whatever.
Although I saw it when I was a kid, and I don't know that I knew who Joan Blondell was. So I don't know that I remember her from that film.
You probably didn't appreciate a lot of what was going on in that movie.
Yeah.
It's all about the Depression. It's pre-code.
It just happened to be on television.
Naughty, like, ladies changing behind a scrim kind of thing.
Back when, you know, you and I were children... There was no cable television.
Right.
There was no VCR. Mm-hmm. There was no anything. And
we did our homework on the back of shovels.
And so what you had was old movies that would be on television.
Yeah.
Like just in the afternoon. Like,
with commercials.
Like the local station would say, we're going to the afternoon movie.
Yeah.
Gold Diggers of 1933. And it was 1974. or whatever, and you thought, 1933, that's 1 million years ago. You know, because, I mean, it really was. It was, yeah. You know, it was 40 years before, and you're a child, and it's black and white, and everything's different, you know. And I would watch those movies and just think...
It's always like looking at cave paintings.
Well, it was always very confusing to me, because I used to wonder if people really behaved that way back then, in the black and white time.
When everything was in black and white?
When everything actually was in black and white.
Right.
Or if they were pretending that things were that way.
Well, yeah, it'd be sort of like...
When you're a child in the time of... And the child of the 70s, and everyone's like, groovy, man. You know, like, that's not...
I grew up worlds. Thinking that all of the 1950s were like happy days.
Yeah.
You know.
Same here.
So it's... Yeah, it's... But it's tricky that way. What movies are people going to look at now and think, oh, yes, well, back in the 20-teens, they were doing blah, 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 you know?
Oh, Haunted House 2.
Exactly. That's practically a documentary about life in America... In 2014.
In one way, it is.
In that we'll pay money to see any stupid movie that comes along. We'll pay money to see,
yeah. Like, people will look at Haunted House 2 in 40 years and be like, how did that... Who was the audience for this film?
It's going to be like one of those...
Who lined up for this?
Except that it isn't funny, it'll be like one of those Looney Tunes cartoons where they make very topical 1946 references.
Yes.
And now you have to get a thesaurus now. Because right. This movie is about... It is a very specific, like, lazy spoof of horror movies of the last year.
Yeah.
So by chance...
we're talking about it now.
Yes, all we right. might as well.
All right.
So if...
A Haunted House 2.
If in 40 years someone happens upon a Haunted House 2 via the microchip in their brain or however it is that people are watching movies... maybe they aren't going to remember The Possession, where a young girl gets a possessed box at a garage sale with a Dybbuk and a bunch of moths in it.
I forgot the title.
Yeah, we had to look it up.
I had to Google
Dybbuk movie.
So,
you know, that's a thing that that was in the public consciousness that, of course, you would do a parody of. It's funny, I think I've even brought this up on the show before, but... I remember when Pauline Kael reviewed High Anxiety, her complaint with the movie was that Mel Brooks wasn't so much satirizing Alfred Hitchcock as letting you know he had seen the movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he would make these references to The Birds or Vertigo or whatever,
right.
But she felt he didn't take it one step further, that he just sort of reenacted them and presented them, and that in itself was a joke. And
because it was him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And boy...
Like I said last week, what if The Man Who Fell to Earth had starred Red Fox?
You know...
I would love to see that movie.
There you sure.
And B, it wouldn't be a satire of anything. It would just be The Man Who Fell to Earth starring Red Fox. The star of Norman Is That You?
Yes. Pauline Kael did not ever have to see Epic Movie. You know, or a haunted house.
She is lucky to be dead.
Yes, in many ways. And so these are movies that really have no joke except to just show you the thing that you know that you saw in another movie.
Right.
Like Scary Movie 5 was nothing but here's that thing you saw in another movie, yeah. And now we're doing it.
Right.
So yeah, a haunted house 2...
Why don't you tell people about it?
The sequel,
and then I will tell people what happened.
The sequel to me. That nobody wanted, or somebody obviously did, because they made it.
The first one made money.
Yeah, clearly. So once again, Marlon Wayans is back, moving into another house with another woman. This time,
well, because Essence Atkins at the end of the first film is possessed,
right,
and so. Possessed by the devil. There's nothing that can be done about it.
And then pops up at the beginning of this movie to parody the end of The Devil Inside,
yeah.
Which, who remembers that movie?
They leave her for dead at the scene of a car accident.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then he moves into a new house with Jamie Presley and her two kids, and, you know, almost immediately The son has an imaginary friend who does terrible things, just like in the Paranormal Activity movies.
Yep.
The daughter finds the spooky box, just like in The Possession. The wife finds a creepy doll, just like in The Conjuring.
Yep.
And there's cameras all over the house, and it's night number four, da, 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 just like the Paranormal Activity.
And they've got... But there's this one is... also picks up on Paranormal Activity, the Marked Ones.
Right.
As well. They take stuff from that.
Yeah, because yeah. Now there's a Mexican neighbor played by Gabriel Iglesias. A guy who I'd never heard of until the trailer for his comedy movie that's coming
serious?
Out. Seriously, I'd never heard of him.
Where you been? It's a big deal.
Dunno. But yeah, before this movie we saw, mind you, this was a movie that was not screened for the press, so we had to pay to see it.
Right.
Whatever its box office take this weekend,
$25
yeah. is us.
$12.50, that's your matinee cost at Los Angeles.
Yeah, at 9:50 in the morning.
Yeah.
When people bring their kids that's to it. An R-rated, smutty
comedy. Mother of the Year brought two children about 10 rows in front of us.
To a movie with visible penises in
little,
it.
Little kids.
Yeah.
It's not just that. It's not just visible penises. It's... just every terrible, raunchy, R-rated thing that you can have in a movie that, A, the child will not understand, and B, the child will then go off and think, okay, well, I can just say and do these things.
And that's how the world works. And the rampant misogyny of these movies, of course. These were both young daughters, by the way, so well done. Yeah, so Gabriel Iglesias plays the Mexican neighbor, and the running joke is that... Marlon Wayans makes something that sounds like it's a race-based assumption. Gabriel Iglesias pretends to be offended by it and then laughs and admits that, no, it's actually true, that he does have a lowrider and he does have eight children and he is a gardener and he will mow your lawn and he will help you sacrifice a chicken to get the ghosts out of the house.
And his car horn does play La Cucaracha.
Ha 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 ha. Ha 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 ha. So funny. I laughed... one time.
Which one?
I laughed a couple times.
What did you laugh at?
But the one thing I sort of laughed at...
You were sitting next to me, but I don't remember you laughing even once.
I laughed at the ongoing scene where Marlon Wayans has sex with the Conjuring doll in every manner of acrobatic position
and
possible.
Nasty, nasty stuff.
Yeah. But the thing is, I then, after seeing this movie, I went back and reread my review of the first Haunted House because
he does
I
it with a stuffed animal.
Because I completely forgot. Yeah. And in the first movie, yeah, he has. So the one thing I laughed at in this movie is a retread from the first film.
It steals from itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But otherwise, yeah, this movie is just, it's the idea of a comedy, you know, one review said that the whole movie is like the kind of thing that runs under the closing credits.
Yeah.
Cause you can just sort of feel like they threw these people in with a situation and told them to go. And there are certain scenes where you can see like Cedric the Entertainer improvising madly, but none of it's very funny.
And Marlon Wayans physically, improvising. A lot. Just doing a lot of crazy physical comedy.
Yeah. But none of it goes anywhere. And there are people in this movie that are way too good to be in it. Missy Pyle, who I've always found really funny, is in this movie. Ashley Rickards, who's on Awkward on MTV. Even, I think, you don't agree with me, but I think Jamie Presley is very funny. I think, you know...
She's... I don't have any opinion about her, actually.
I've seen her in... Well, do you remember when we saw her in the Jerry Springer movie? I think it was the first thing that we'd seen her in.
Yeah, she was great in the Jerry Springer
movie.
Sort of
like, who is this? She's a riot, you know? And I saw her in this other movie that that never really got out much, but it was this indie comedy called Poor White Trash. I think she's really funny. And yeah, but in this movie, she's just sort of the harumphy woman, you know... Who's, of course, dragging everything down because she's a woman.
Right.
Yeah, this is pain, this movie.
Okay, so I agree with you. Mm-hmm. This is a garbage movie.
And yet.
I don't I've decided that I don't understand myself.
Heaven knows I don't.
I've decided that there is something in me, perhaps a demon... that once a year, about annually, causes me to go see a film like this where I'm watching it and in my head I think, well, this is terrible. This is the worst. This is not a good movie. This is rotten. This movie is rotten. Mm. And I'm laughing through the entire film. And I don't understand why I'm laughing through the entire film. other than, like, it happened to me at That's My Boy. It happened to me at, oh, gosh, it's in my review. Pause so I can go look that up so I can remember. Okay, we're back. Movie 43.
Which I laughed at, too.
All right, but
I'm still paying the price.
We understand. We understand movie 43 to be rancid.
Yes.
Okay.
But we still laughed. And we even we laughed separately.
I didn't just laugh. I didn't just laugh at movie 43 and That's My Boy. I howled.
No, me too.
For both, through both.
Not for That My Boy, but for movie 43, I did.
And
I'm not proud of it.
And I'm done. When I'm done with this thing, and I laughed. I laughed not in an uproarious fashion for this movie, but I did. As you can attest, I sat next to you going,
You goon laughed.
There's a thing about movies sometimes like this. Hey, there we
Woo-hoo!
Go. Where I think maybe I just give myself to being taken hostage by this.
You have comedy Stockholm syndrome.
This burning feces pile that's in front of me.
No escape. You might as well try and find
like, something. Hey, I'm a burning pile of crap. I'm telling you a joke, though. Listen to my jokes. I know I look like a burning pile of crap, but I'm a stand-up comic. I got jokes.
Try not to smell me.
Yeah. And I sat through this whole thing going, I think I know what it is. I think the thing that these three films have in common, movie 43, this one, and That's My Boy, is a dedication to absolute scatology. Just disgusting, shocking, wrong kind of humor. And there's a 9-year-old in me that just thinks, poop, look, it's more poop, prison rape, you know, there's just, I have no defense.
There's the lowest common denominator inside of you.
There is.
It must be fed occasionally.
There is the target demographic for the Mesquite AMC 30-plex. Mesquite is a suburb of Dallas, in East Dallas.
Is that the Firewheel or
whatever? It is. No. Firewheel's up in Rowlett where I used to take my mother to the movies.
Right.
That's a classy joint. The Mesquite AMC 30 screen place is, it's like going to hell. Actual hell. And it's, yeah, the folks who line up for that one, technically, they are my people, because if I went to see A Haunted House 2 at the Mesquite 30 AMC, I would probably still sit there in the audience and go, with everybody else. So, yeah, you can take the boy out of the trailer park, and I was taken out of the trailer park. But part of the trailer park will always live inside the boy.
All right, then.
It's a very bad film. I don't know why I laughed so much. Heaven is for Real. Oh, wait. Before we discuss Heaven is for Real,
yes.
Who sponsors Linoleum Knife, Alonzo?
I'm so glad you asked me that, Dave White.
Why don't you tell everyone?
Linoleum Knife is brought to you by No Budget Film School.
Yes.
And coming up on May 3rd and 4th in Los Angeles, they'll be holding their famed Art and Science of No Budget Filmmaking class. Veteran indie producer and No Budget Film School founder Mark Stolbaroff teaches the specific methods, models, and priorities of successful No Budget filmmaking in this unique, one-of-a-kind class. If you're ready to make a movie, if you're tired of chasing money, tired of asking for permission to make that movie, this will be the most practical filmmaking class you will ever take. Stolbaroff will teach you how to make a film with whatever resources you have available to you right now. These cutting-edge techniques cannot be found at film school or in other classes. He'll be joined by several guest speakers, including distribution expert Peter Broderick, post-production maven Matt Radicke of the indie post house Different by Design, and the producer of Marwin Call, one of my favorite documentaries of recent years, Mr. Tom Putnam, who is himself a no-budget filmmaker. Past guest speakers have included Joe Carnahan, David Gordon Green, whose new film we'll be discussing shortly, Jody Hill, Ty West, Jay Duplass, Sean Baker, Drake Doremus, Destin Cretton, Alex Karpowski, and many others. You can register at nobudgetfilmschool.eventbrite.com.
Or, say my favorite part.
Or visit the website nobudgetfilmschool.com. Save 20% when you use the special promotional code Linoleum.
That's my favorite part.
We have a code.
We have a code.
We've arrived.
Well,
sort of ish. Students.
We've arrived at this dining room table.
We have done that.
No.
Students with a valid ID can save even more. So yeah, that's coming up if it's not already on your calendar.
And seriously, I mean it. Someone do that, please.
And, get on it.
And use the Linoleum so that everyone knows that, like, we influenced somebody.
Their sponsorship was not in vain.
I mean, we got the money.
But we want them to feel like they got something out of it, too.
Yeah.
Heaven is for real. I didn't see it. Because, you know, I would have caught fire walking in the theater.
No.
I kind of want to... I will watch it on cable and just fast forward to the Margot Martindale parts. Because I love her.
She's really terrific.
That's what I hear.
All right, so I saw Heaven is for Real.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you went off to see Bears.
Correct.
Yeah. And I saw Bears later, so we will be discussing Bears as a team, as a family. Heaven is for Real is based on the memoir written by Todd Burpo. Yes, that's his actual last name.
Well, I don't think anybody thought he was going to change it to that.
And he is a minister in, I think, like Nebraska, somewhere like that. And he is at a 4 year. He had a 4 year old son. His son is now like 17 or something. Mm. But
I hope he was homeschooled.
Colton Burpo was 4. He had a ruptured appendix. He had to go to the hospital, operated on. While on the operating table, he left his body and had visions of heaven. Which everyone just assumed was, you know...
You're 4.
You know, anesthesia.
When I was that age, I wrote a bestseller called Batman is for Real, no. But no one actually bought it.
And so, no one was really taking him seriously until he started saying things like, I saw my great-grampy, and I saw my miscarried sibling, and she doesn't have a name because she died in mommy's belly, and, you know, things like that.
And she wasn't baptized, so she went straight to hell.
They aren't Catholic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They're evangelical.
I know.
It's different.
I don't think the miscarried ones go to hell. I think it's if you're born and aren't baptized, then you wind up in limbo.
How does that work?
Or purgatory. Oh, who knows?
How does that work? Like, it's not your fault you weren't baptized when and then got the crib death.
You know.
It's not your fault, right?
It's what your parents get for not having done it fast enough. I don't know.
How fast do you need to do it? Like, you're supposed to have someone right
there? There should be a priest standing next to the OBGYN. I don't know.
So everyone says, so the kid says, you know, I went to heaven and I saw Jesus and he rode a multicolored horse and he's got blue eyes and...
Took me to the danger zone.
You see, yeah, he looks like Kenny Loggins, this Jesus. Whenever I call you friend, era, keep the fire. Celebrate me home, Kenny Loggins. Not Danger Zone Kenny Loggins.
No.
Because he had short hair by then.
Yes.
House
on Pooh Corner?
No. The film is very kind-hearted and very gentle and very sweet and doesn't hit you on the face with, you know, you must believe this. Now, it asserts its truth
mm-hmm.
in a way that does not leave any room for anyone else's opinion
right.
on the subject, but at least for anyone else's opinion on the subject to be also true.
Ah.
But those people do get to express themselves.
Right.
You know, there's an atheist psychologist in the film who says, well, you know, this is all explainable. Science can explain these visions that people have. And almost immediately, Greg Kinnear, who plays Todd Burpo, is like, wrong! I was like, dude, you came to her for a nice conversation and a sort of civil exchange.
Yeah, just because she's telling you what you don't want to hear.
She tells you the thing that she thinks, and he gets up and is like, well, I know what I know, and then he leaves. I'm like,
then why did you come?
You're doing it wrong, yeah. But it really, and that's just laying the groundwork, because the person who's really on Greg Kinnear's ass during the film is Margot Martindale. Now, her storyline is that she works in the church, also a Christian, just like everybody else in the movie, but she has a son who died in military service. We don't know exactly how or where or what. Mm-hmm. But she actually says, she goes, how come my son died and yours didn't and now gets to tell everyone he went to heaven? And did he see my son up there, by the way? And why are you doing this in public? And why are you turning our church into a magnet for crazy, thoughtless lunatics? And why is this in the newspaper? Like, she's laying it down. Mm-hmm. And the movie doesn't feel the need to run her over with a car like it does, like they do in God's Not Dead.
Right.
So I kept giving it points for not being God's Not Dead. Mm. Heaven is for Real is not a particularly well-made film. It's serviceable. It is competently executed. You know, you can tell that they've seen some Terrence Malick movies because they love that.
Dappled sunlight. They love those branches.
Amber waves of grain, man. Yeah. They're like the sunflowers that were all through To the Wonder. Mm. And like the most banal plant in the world, by the way, the sunflower. Let's just say that out loud. It's true.
I was thinking about To the Wonder during...
They do exist.
During bears, but we'll get to that later.
Boring, basic bitch kind of plants do exist. And the sunflower is one of them.
Gerber daisies?
Yes. red roses. Yeah. So the...
Daffodils were too edgy for this.
So anyway, it looks fine. You know, it loves late afternoon sunlight. It's that kind of thing.
Providence. It's all shot in golden hour.
It looks like an ad for something that may kill you, but is actually sort of a nice medicine. Mm-hmm. And the movie does not hate anybody, which again,
big ups.
So nobody is sent to hell at the end of this film. And that is a big improvement over its evil cousin, God's Not Dead. Now, here is a thing that I never do. I never look at comments on my reviews. Mm-hmm. But for this one, I knew I had to. Like, I knew that I had to make the exception and go read comments for this. And I was richly rewarded. Here's my favorite of the comments. Now, there are some comments on the movies.com page that are just sort of like, Jesus is Lord. And I'm like, the movie said that already. You don't have to. The movie is doing its job. Here's my favorite comment from someone named Jeff Wade in Fort Worth, from where I'm from.
Yeah.
Or where I lived. Where I lived for a bit. Okay, here's what he says. Dave, quote, the liberal hating, unquote, white is probably not going to heaven because of his like me or I'll force you to like me prideful attitude. Smiley emoticon. Dave, you shouldn't hate a movie because it doesn't agree with your atheist views. Liberals are shallow babies. Wah, people don't like me. Wah, people don't agree with me. LOL. Now that is the entire comment.
Wow. Let's take that apart,
I'm going to break it down here. First of all, the liberal hating the way he's written it here suggests that I hate liberals. But what he's really trying to say
is that you're a liberal hater.
I am a liberal and I am a hating person.
Right.
Yeah. I'm not going to heaven because I have a prideful attitude. Now, do you understand what that means, really?
I think I do, but maybe not in this context.
In the evangelical context, the prideful attitude is sort of like, you know, I know best. I know what's best for me. God doesn't know what's best for me. I do. But having a prideful attitude doesn't have anything to do with having an attitude of like me or I will force you to like me. Again,
what is that? I don't even get what that means, how you glean that from your writing.
He doesn't explain what he thinks that means. Then there's the smiley face, which is so great. I really like it when adults use little emoticons and comments and things like that. It tells you a lot about that adult. I'm an atheist, apparently. And I'm a shallow baby liberal, and I'm crying about something. And then he ends with, of course, LOL, which is another great thing for adults to be
I would, of course, counter
using
that,
in written communication.
That evangelical Christians tend to often online be...
No, that's not where we're going with this.
Big
you
babies.
Can, you can stop. You can stop with that right now. What we're talking about is if you read my review for this film on movies.com,
which is very even.
There is not one word in the review.
No. Like, Ingu reviewed it for The Wrap, Ingu Kang, and she says that she's an atheist.
Yeah.
And even with that expressed, you know, liked a lot of things about the film.
Right.
But, you know, this guy knows nothing about your actual, you know...
anything.
Belief system and just jumps to crazy conclusions that none of which could be gathered from your review.
Yeah, that's the weird part about it.
Maybe he's just leaving this comment on every review that isn't an unabashed A+ 5-star hootenanny.
What it really shows is the level of reading comprehension that exists in the world. I harp on this all the time.
Yeah.
Because it's the thing that we don't talk about very often. When people start fighting on the internet, it is very often
they didn't read the first thing
because will tell you that they read it and they probably did read it, but they did not understand what they read.
And then they immediately left the comment based on their
people don't know how to read for tone. They don't know how to read for mixed ideas. You know, like this is good and this is bad, and here's how they can work together. Stuff like that. People cannot read well anymore. And I'm not, you know, the most brilliant person in the world. If I don't think I have read something for my understanding, I go back and reread it. If I don't think I really understood what I read, I have to go back and reread it.
Well, see, what you're supposed to do is immediately
freak out,
get angry.
Yeah.
And then leave a horrible comment under it.
This is not a horrible comment. This is a great comment because it's great. And who
an insulting, disparaging
comment. Who lives in Fort Worth and knows Jeff Wade? Because I would super love to have a conversation with this guy. I don't intend to hit reply and actually start a conversation with him in public.
No.
But, you
know. You're just outing him on the show.
So what? He left a public comment.
No, he put his name. It's right there.
And here's the thing that no one will ever know from my writing about these kinds of films or in life. The only person in this world who knows exactly what I believe and why is you. You alone have that information. I grew up in this environment, the environment that gave us this film and the environment that gave us God's Not Dead.
And Jeff Wade.
And also that gave us Jeff Wade. I grew up in that environment. I know it inside and out. I know their language to the letter. And I know what all the code words mean. And I know what all the talking around things means. I know it. It's in me. And because of that, and because of my experiences with those folks and those institutions, I refuse to discuss it any longer. In public, I discuss the cultural output that comes along. I will talk about the films because that's my job. But I'm not talking about me and my beliefs to anybody, period, ever, again, for the rest of my life, because I'm done with it. I'm done having the fight about it. I'm done fighting with people about this. You fight institutions. Also, you trade good-natured, sarcastic insults with Jeff Wade, maybe, if he chooses to
come respond.
Come find me. But the, I'm not going to have, like, he can believe that I'm an atheist for the rest of his life. And someone else can read my reviews and think, oh, he must be a Christian because he's sympathetic to this or that. Well, you're never going to know. Because there are way too many people yelling about what they believe all the time. You know, the Christians, the evangelical conservative Christians in the country are the very worst about this right now. They are doing it the worst and the hardest. The Catholics are right up there, but most Catholics don't...
They're pretty chill. Unless they're standing outside of an abortion clinic.
It's the hierarchy that
says the stupid stuff.
That says the stupid stuff.
And self-appointed mouthpieces like Bill Donahue.
Yeah. But, you know...
Look, there are atheists that embarrass me. That just get really nasty about it and just say terrible things about people of faith. And I'm like, look, I'm not evangelical about my atheism. I'm not looking to proselytize anybody. And I'm certainly not looking to judge anybody. If you want to believe stuff, believe stuff. I just, what you believe doesn't get to impact my life.
I give the minority of angry atheists a bit of a pass simply because they're not in power. Mm. They don't have power. They don't have cultural currency, really. Whether or not the conservative evangelicals think they do, right, or not, they do have it. They got the power. So it's really, you know,
they got the power.
Thank you for making that literal.
Well, I thought you were thinking it, but you don't hit those notes. So I thought I would do you a favor.
I can hit those notes. Oh, is this a snap off?
I'm waiting.
I got the wait. I got the power. See, okay, I did it.
Okay, all right. I stand corrected.
Yeah. Don't step to me. About I got the power.
March of the falsettos.
I can do it. Sometimes.
Tell me what.
So we're done yes, talking about heaven is for real. It ain't garbage. It's just, you know, it's comfort food for the fans.
Yeah.
Really, that's all it is. Transcendence. Should we maybe talk about our other sponsor?
Oh, I thought we'd do that after Transcendence.
All right. Transcendence. Johnny Depp is in a box. His head is in a box. They saved Hitler's brain.
They saved Johnny Depp's brain. Johnny Depp is the world's leading artificial intelligence expert.
Right.
And then this group of Luddite anti-tech terrorists led by shoots
him in the arm.
Led by Kate Mara from House of Cards.
They send Lucas Haas after him, and Lucas Haas is such a bad...
Yeah, he grazes him with a bullet, but that bullet was radioactive.
Right.
So while he is slowly dying, his equally brilliant wife, Rebecca Hall, and their best pal, Paul Bettany, decide that they will download or upload Johnny Depp's brain into this massive supercomputer AI
thing. What's the difference between downloading and uploading?
Uploading is when I send the podcast out into the world. Yeah. Downloading is when somebody else receives the podcast.
But they still have to load it into their computer, right?
Right. They're downloading it. Look, I'm sending this podcast from my computer into the internet. You're That's uploading.
It, are you sending it through television?
I'm sending it into the uploading, the internet ether. And then when it goes... If you would listen,
I am listening
to me.
Your words are all gobbledygook.
I've actually been listening to recent episodes, and I discovered you don't listen to me. You talk over me, and you then either say the same thing that I was just saying that you weren't listening to me say, or you run right over me,
no.
or something. You you not, really spend a lot of time not listening to me when
not,
I do this.
That's not true.
Uploading is when it goes from the computer up into the internet.
In the air.
Air. Right. And then downloading is when it goes from the internet air down into your computer. You dig?
Okay. So they do what to his brain? They download it.
They upload it.
Into the air.
Yes.
So everyone can have it.
Well, eventually. Once it goes, they upload it into the giant computer. And then once it's in the computer, it goes into the internet.
Then it goes into the big computer. And then he talks and he's like, hey, it's me again. I'm back. What's for dinner? But I don't have to eat anymore because I'm just a head in a box.
But wait, now I want to take over Wall Street and get all this money.
And everything else.
Yes.
All the medicine, all the money, all the...
You would
think he would just kind of deal with all the porn.
I'm
in the internet forever. Nonstop porn.
I'm going to play
Plus,
some
Minesweeper. I don't have a body to get worn out.
So instead of doing that, he immediately makes a whole gajillion amounts of money through Wall Street trading or whatever.
Yeah,
which Rebecca Hall then spends
on. He steals it, essentially.
They all do.
Pretty much steals it.
Yeah. Then she buys a town, and under that town, they build the giant Andromeda Strain supercomputer that he lives in.
And she leaves the town sort of intact and run down.
Yeah, it's still shabby on, ground level. You'd think that all the people in town would suddenly be driving around like Corvettes because they all made a fortune from having their cruddy hotels and diners
bought. They're still hanging out on the dirt corner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But underneath, it's smooth.
Limping.
Yeah. Underneath is the white gleaming, the Emmerak they build.
It's real pretty.
Yeah, with all these solar panels on top that no one seems to notice. It's not until they actually invite, Cillian Murphy from the government to come look at this thing that anyone's even bothered to notice that they have built this enormous underground computer with a gajillion solar panels on top. That didn't raise any red flags and nothing.
We're turning your town back into the computer.
So the whole thing is it live or is it Memorex? Is it still Johnny Depp's soul, or is the computer just putting Johnny Depp's face on itself in its plan to conquer the world?
And the answer is, who cares?
Yeah, exactly. This movie pretends like it's about deep, heavy philosophical issues about technology and man's dependence upon it and how willing we are to subsume our humanity to our creation.
It may have been at some point along the way in the script stage.
It's possible. But what they wound up with is
a sci-fi thriller about...
Yeah, that's not good. And
about power corrupting.
Yeah. And it basically, it raises these issues.
Are you surprised by that?
Yeah, it raises these issues and then can't run away from them fast enough. Anything that might have been an ethical conundrum gets very quickly answered, or somebody is so super incredible evil that, of course, there's no way you would sign on for it. And
two things that are likable.
Rebecca Hall.
And it looks real nice.
Well, it ought to, since it's directed by Wally Pfister, who is best known as the cinematographer for Christopher Nolan. Although somebody was
Inception,
pointing
out, The Dark Knight, The Dark Knight Rises.
Somebody pointed out that there's kind of a checkered history of cinematographers becoming directors.
Oh, really?
Gordon Willis, one of the great cinematographers of the 70s, who shot the Godfather movies. Do you know what his directorial debut was?
No.
Windows.
Have y'all seen Windows?
It's lady cruising.
It's Cruising for Lesbians.
The same year as Cruising.
It is one of the most offensive films that I have ever seen in my life.
Elizabeth Ashley is this lesbian who is super obsessed with Talia Shire. And so,
and who wouldn't be?
To drive Talia into her arms, Elizabeth Ashley hires a series of goons to sort of threaten her and...
Not just threaten her. Rape her.
Does that actually happen? It's been a while since I've seen it. I can't remember.
Rape her.
So that she'll want to give up on men.
And this isn't wacky prison rape like in A Haunted House 2 that we all love.
Not the hilarious kind.
Not the funny rapes. Yeah. This is the
It's so creepy. And then it winds up with, like, Elizabeth Ashley holding a knife to Talia Shire's throat. It's a movie that exists only so that you can have clips of it in the celluloid closet and be like, can you believe this exists?
And watching the commentary, people watch their skin crawl.
Ugh. Yeah.
It demands to be seen because it is so toxic.
Yeah.
A piece of film.
Yeah. Anyway, that was Gordon Willis's direct. I think the only movie he ever directed.
Oh, sad.
You know.
Yeah.
But you know, Barry Sonnenfeld, Jan de Balk.
Okay, well, Transcendence isn't as bad as Windows.
Well, no, I'll give it that.
Yeah.
But it's a snooze, and it really starts out promisingly, and then just kind of fritters itself away. It casts really good actors and gives them nothing to do. I mean. Kate Mara
is barely in it.
Lucas Haas is barely in it.
Well, he's got one thing to do.
Morgan Freeman sort of stands around saying sort of
stuff,
ethical things.
Yeah. The entire film belongs to Rebecca Hall.
Yeah, Johnny Depp
has checked out, much like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, and I mean he spends most of the movie as a disembodied voice anyway, but even in that doesn't give it any kind of juice.
No. This is Rebecca Hall's movie, yeah. And if you watch the film and read it as her film, then it becomes something interesting. Then it becomes
a movie about grief.
Then it becomes a film about grief and about how much mourning is too much and when do you let them go.
Right.
And that's interesting. And he surrounds her in the frame a lot with just darkness.
Mm.
So it's very intimate when you're watching her, and very not when everything else is taking place. So if good looking is all you need, then this is a good looking movie. If you need it to be about something other than, you know, will we, you know, save the world from the supercomputer that has turned evil, then, you know, yeah.
And it just and then it has this ending that doesn't even make any sense. That
not tons. I don't want to give that away.
No, I'm not going to. But it seems to sort of subvert everything that's gone on beforehand. Yeah. And it's one of those movies that starts with the ending as though, like, well, we can get away with this narrative technique because we've got something else super exciting that we're going to throw at you at the end. No, yeah. No, not really. No.
Yeah. Okay.
Who else is this podcast brought to you by, Dave White?
Some book by some dude. Wait, was...
I believe specifically you're referring to The Real Truth by Reed Martin.
Yeah. You know what? You just sit back and let me do this.
I was just giving you a little prompt. I thought you had lost your lines.
No, I was just scrolling up.
I'm standing here under the stage.
Scrolling up my copy.
Prompting.
Scrolling up. I was scrolling up.
The star that shone on Bethlehem still shines for us today.
Are you ready to sit back and listen to me be a professional copy reading ad person?
Have at it. I want to watch this.
Linoleum Knife is brought to you by The Real Truth. Everything you didn't know you needed to know about making an independent film by Reed Martin. This is one of the very few books on independent film production that tells you like it is from some of the top filmmakers like Christopher Nolan, Barbara Koppel, Lee Daniels, and Darren Aronofsky, but also includes interviews with dozens of indie film studio executives. In fact, reading The Real Truth is almost like sitting down for an hour with dozens of today's leading film executives such as Nancy Utley, president of Fox Searchlight. I was just hanging out with her the other day, by the way.
Nance.
She's a real chill lady. And we went and got tea together, and she asked me for all of my great ideas about what should happen with Fox Searchlight in the future. And I said, more kung fu. She took a note of that. Nancy discusses what kind of marketing materials you need to create along the way during production, so you're not trying to grab whatever scraps you can at the last minute. Also, Cassian Elways, I'm sure I ruined that name, producer of Dallas Buyers Club, will tell you about the thought process big-name actors go through before deciding to appear in low-budget indies. Cashin also produced Lee Daniels' The Butler, and just launched Cashin Elway's Independent Screenwriter Fellowship, which awards all-expense-paid trips to Sundance. But you can't win that contest on the strength of your screenplay. Oh, I'm sorry. But if you can't win that contest on the strength of... Let's face it, you can't win that contest on the strength of your screenplay.
Please.
But if you can't win that contest on the strength of your screenplay, you can still get terrific advice from Cashin by reading The Real Truth. Eamon Bowles of Magnolia Pictures, which distributed the Orca documentary Blackfish, and more recently Lars von Trier's Nymphomaniac with Charlotte Gainsbourg, talks about what's wrong with nearly every indie film business plan. And who knew that indie filmmakers wrote business plans? Apparently they do.
So there.
You'll get insights from Bob Burney of Picture House, who distributes films like Memento, Whale Rider, Pan's Labyrinth, The Passion, The Passion of the Christ, My Big Fat Greek Wedding, When Others Passed on It. Bob will tell you why most indie films don't get distribution. Because they're bad. So bad. This is why your script isn't going to win the contest. And why the inability to market a film to audiences is usually the single biggest deal breaker. All this... and how not to screw up your first film in 100 different ways can be found in The Real Truth, Everything You Didn't Know You Needed to Know About Making an Independent Film, from Reed Martin, from Faber & Faber Publishers. The end. Darn, that's the end.
We'll have a link to buy it on There'll our be Facebook links. Page. Oh, also on our Facebook page, yeah. Speaking of sponsors, we have just now posted a listener survey. And I'll have the links up on Facebook. I'll be tweeting it. We're gathering your information
so that we can market more effectively to you.
Well, we're not gathering your information in a way that's connected to you.
We're going to track you.
It's confidential.
You'll all be receiving your little embed chips the mail. Have to install them yourself.
There's no BIM mark involved here. We're not even collecting your information.
It's a simple process. Get a butter knife.
We're not even collecting your email address. We just want to know your age and
all you have to do is slice your own throat a little bit, like a quarter of an inch. The chip is smaller than that.
You're not helping. Anyway, it would help us a whole lot if you would fill out the survey, and it would just in terms of finding other awesome people like Reed Martin and like the No Budget Film School who would want to sponsor this program.
Yeah. If you have an actual linoleum knife, don't use that. That is too sharp to embed the chip.
Stop it.
Linoleum knives are for linoleum.
Only.
Only.
So anyway, thank you in advance for filling out our survey. We really appreciate it.
Let's talk about Joe.
We
didn't talk about Joe last time.
No, we did not. It is the new film from David Gordon Green, it's funny, we were just talking about another filmmaker who's had high highs and low lows. He is, I think, one of the most interesting American indie filmmakers working right now. He just did Prince Avalanche last year. He also gave us George Washington and All the Real Girls. And, he branched out into bigger budget movies with Pineapple Express. He also did The Sitter and Your Highness.
There's another one that I laughed all the way through.
Yeah, you were a fan of Your Highness. I cringe at the thought. Anyway, so this is a new one. He did not write it, which I think is kind of key to what's going on here. It's based on a novel, apparently. And it stars Nicolas Cage, who is really good in this. As I said in my review, every so often when he's asked to act, he can still do it. If Werner Herzog says, yes, you are the bad lieutenant, that's a bad Werner Herzog. I wasn't really trying.
Yeah, it's a very bad Werner Herzog.
I wasn't really doing Werner Herzog.
It's based on the book by Larry Brown. The Southern writer.
Mm-hmm. So Cage plays Joe, who has knocked around a bit, has been to jail, he's now... running a work crew of guys who are poisoning trees so that they can be cut down.
Yes.
And Ty Sheridan, who you'll remember from Mud and from The Tree of Life, is this kid who has moved to town with his family, his horrible, horrible alcoholic father, and is trying to find work to get him and his mother and sister away from him. So he starts working for Joe, and he and Joe kind of find a kinship, and they become friends.
Joe becomes his surrogate dad.
Yeah, basically.
Because his own father is violent and abusive
right.
alcoholic.
And the thing is, where the movie goes wrong is that the father is already terrible. You know, he's an alcoholic. He's you know, he's spending the family money on booze. It's Angela's Ashes kind of stuff.
Here. Yeah.
And then they have to make him worse.
Oh, he gets way worse.
He gets ridiculously, like, monster movie worse to the point where you're like, you had me at alcoholic and abusive. We really didn't have to go this extra mile to make me not like this guy. And it just, I don't know. There's a movie we'll be talking about next week. By the way, next week's episode will be a little late because I'll be coming back from Dallas. And we won't be posting on Sunday. It'll be more like Monday.
Monday, so you're going to wait a little bit.
Yeah. There's a movie coming out next week called Lock with Tom Hardy that sort of takes a narrative gamble that really pays off. And when I was watching Joe for the first half, I was so into the characters, particularly the Nicolas Cage and Ty Sheridan characters, and the Green does such a great job of capturing their milieu, this little town, and the people who live there, and you know, the little store they go to, and the people on the work crew, and that kind of thing, which is one of his strengths as a filmmaker. He's really good at sort of putting you inside these little worlds. Where I just,
grimy poverty South is something he gets.
He knows how to capture. I just remember thinking while I was watching it, oh, could we just be here for a while, and can we just let things breathe out and not get into this big plot? Like, it would just be nice to just have this story and
Mud,
sort of see
Mud is guilty a little bit of this.
Mud
as well.
Is very Mud. By the time you get to that third act where people are bitten by snakes and running around and da da da, this movie does the same thing where suddenly it has to be about things that happen and these big crazy things happen, and it jolts you out of what had been this really interesting sort of pastoral, you know, grimy and poor, but still pastoral film about these people and their sort of little tiny character development things that feel like real life and not like these big imposed dramas that movies do. And then it does that.
I have nothing new to add to this other than Nicolas Cage is great in the way that Nicolas Cage is almost always great. That, no matter what kind of movie he's in, he isn't ever really predictable unless it's something that you can feel him sleepwalking through, like
Knowing.
Bangkok Dangerous. No. Knowing is amazing.
God, I hate that movie.
Bangkok Dangerous.
Season of the Witch.
Season of the Witch is hilarious. So I'm a fan, whether he's in the terrible genre films or the good genre films or even in stuff like this. I'm actually sort of, I feel like he wants to go back and forth more than he does, but he can't find the good stuff, you know, the way he wants to find it.
I'm all for him making dopey B-movies if he would make better dopey B-movies.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. I mean, Bangkok Dangerous. That's the one I keep
bringing
up. Yeah,
Ghost Rider 2.
Yeah, Ghost Rider 2 is terrible.
So you're saying he can't find good stuff in terms of he can't find good B-movies?
No. I don't think he can find good David Gordon Green-style movies,
right,
which is where he needs to go.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
I'm
happy that he found this one, because this one gives him a chance to be the guy that everyone says doesn't exist anymore.
Exactly.
He's
still got it in him. He just rarely calls upon it.
He's keeping his life interesting.
He's too busy making Trespass, you know, and Drive Angry.
Yeah. Anyway, bears.
Bears.
It's about these bears.
See, and
there's a mama bear and there's two little baby bears. Mm-hmm. And
this being a Disney movie,
then
Dad
Santa
is never
Claus
even
comes. And when Santa Claus comes, everything changes.
Wrong movie.
What happens in Bears?
You're referencing Santa and the Three Bears, a terrible, terrible children's holiday film. No, this is one of the Disney nature documentaries, and so we get a cutesy narration by John C. Reilly.
Very cutesy, folksy kind of, you know, banjo music. It's
got a real kind of
Why do I need the banjo movie? Banjo music.
Because it's a Country Bear Jamboree.
Yeah, exactly.
I actually kind of liked the Philip Phillips song that pops up
early. You and 1 billion other people.
No, the one in this movie.
You and 1 billion other
people. Oh, is that the hit?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know. I'd never heard it
before. Yeah. How?
If I had, it didn't register.
How is it the things that are in the air everywhere you go wind up missing your ears?
I don't listen to the eyes. I don't listen to the radio.
Right.
And then, you know, look, when we go to the grocery store, it's not like they're playing the hits of now. They're playing the Go-Go's.
They're playing the Cocteau Twins. No. That's my favorite thing. Go to the grocery store, like Whole Foods, and they're playing the Cocteau Twins in Whole Foods.
They do drop straw.
Yeah, it's just like that's... I mean, I know they're trying to just get me.
Yeah.
But they I know. They are getting me.
There's nothing like realizing, ooh, Target demo. Yeah. Oof, right in the chest.
That's me, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, so I don't hear that stuff. Or if I do, it's this... It's just white noise of a song I do not know. You know.
Uh-huh.
Anyway. So they play that song at some point. The movie, basically, it's a year in the life. It starts out with the mother bear, who they call Skye, and her cubs, Scout and Amber, who, when we first see them, are, like, post-fetal, basically. They're kind of fuzzy. They don't really have, like...
I want to know how they got that footage, the just-born hibernation footage. How do you get that footage?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't
but they do. Either. And so then they all wakey-wakey, and they have to clamber down. It's all set in Alaska, and this protected wildlife preserve.
And they have to eat. I mean, that's the entire film. They have to find salmon, and they've got several months to do it, but they don't find enough. And so the movie is structured as this sort of race against time.
Yeah.
Even though...
Ain't no bears going to die in bears.
Yeah. The thing I learned from this film is that a hungry bear, if hungry enough, will eat another bear.
Yeah.
And so they raise that as a possibility, like, you know, here comes the wolf and he wants to snack on them little cubs. And then he doesn't because it's, you know, it's rated G and it's a movie for five-year-olds. It really is a film for five-year-olds.
There's a lot of lactating going on in this movie.
It's definitely aimed at... elementary school children.
Yes.
Very young elementary
school. Although I will say, young Nicholas Lemire, who was sitting next to me at the screening I attended, was
he bored?
Bit of a fidget monster, yeah. He was not super having it. But apparently, according to Christy, he was asking questions later about, like, who the bears were, blah, blah, blah. So I guess he absorbed some of it.
Mommy, what do they do in the woods? Well, son, let me tell you.
I found it kind of, it's charming.
It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
You know, if your kid flipped out after watching the lions eat the gazelles or whatever in African Cats, it's less traumatic.
It's not traumatic at all.
No.
There's nothing.
Well, there's a part where you think one of the cubs might be dead, and then it isn't.
Yeah, that lasts for 10 seconds.
When you're a kid, though, you know.
Right.
And actually, the moment that reminded me of To the Wonder, there's this whole thing where, like, they're in this mud flat where the river has receded, and they're digging for clams or whatever. And then the water starts coming back and filling up the ripples.
It's a beautiful
film. And I turned to Christy and said, To the Wonder.
It's a beautifully shot film.
Yes,
it looks lovely. You get these beautiful creatures and this beautiful environment.
And like these amazing helicopter shots of like the whole terrain, but then also very close up things where you're thinking somebody's going to get grizzly manned at any moment.
But there ain't. I mean, there's not much of a story.
No, it's not special. But
get some food, and then we're going to go hibernate again.
And as cutesy as the narration is, it's better than the stuff they wrote for Sam Jackson in African Cats.
Also, I was hoping it would be the Hillbilly Bears movie.
Paul?
Greetings, Alonzo and Dave.
Wait, DVDs.
DVDs. Torque on Blu-ray.
Woohoo!
Torque. Now on Blu-ray.
Which also has Jamie Presley in it.
It sure does. Torque.
I need to watch
Y'all this watch Torque.
And it's a pretty funny Adam Scott, right?
Yes. Yes.
Or I should say pre-intentionally funny, perhaps.
What's your DVD pick, Alonzo?
The Five Obstructions. Woo!
Yay.
Coming out on Blu-ray this week.
You can't woo to that the way I wooed to Torque.
I suppose not. I was just... I wanted to annoy Lars von Trier.
Maybe he woos.
As he has done so often to me.
Greetings, Alonzo and Dave. The running bit on the last episode about how it's pronounced collegial That wasn't a bit.
It was sort of a bit. It became a bit.
A bit is something you plan in advance.
It was an improv bit then.
Made me laugh out loud a number of times on our run. He LOL'd.
Oh, well.
IRL. Yeah. The episodes, honestly, just keep getting better and better.
Well, thank you.
That's a fact. They do.
The mic hits keep coming.
They do, in fact, keep getting better and better. I just got back from seeing Under the Skin, which I enjoyed, but I honestly wish it had had even less of a narrative. It kind of felt like an episode of The Outer Limits, but not in a good way. Mm. I thought the first half of the film felt so alien and chilling, and then after that part in the middle, it totally changed tone, and I started to enjoy it less. Scarlett Johansson was amazing, though, and boners. If you guys are still inclined to wish me a happy birthday on air, it would make my year, or at least my month. My birthday is April 25th. Keep up the good work. Cheers, Chris. Is that soon? When is that?
April 25th is like this
next
Friday.
Next week, right?
Yeah.
Oh, so. What's in it for us? You think that up. You think of a good answer to that question. We'll see about your happy birthday wish, Chris.
Because we're not going to say...
If that's your real name.
We're not going to say, happy birthday, Chris, unless, you know, of course, there's some sort of trade-off involved.
Yeah.
Because we don't just go around saying, happy birthday, Chris, to just anyone.
No. Okay, so here's another letter about God's Not Dead.
Oh, goody. That's the gift that keeps giving.
I saw this movie and mostly I agree with you. It was pretty absurd for the most part. I couldn't believe the professor was hit by a car and converts as the two smug ministers congratulate themselves. However, how is this different than any other fan service? Are you equally frustrated when Iron Man magically has 100 Iron Man suits zoom in to save the day? Are you equally appalled when Al Gore tells only his side of the story and wins an Oscar for it?
Hang on.
I'm going to finish.
Okay.
Movies preach to their audiences. So what? Name your favorite movie, and I bet anyone could poke a bunch of holes in it, too. Oh, Hasard Baltazar.
Yeah.
Start poking. You like it because it played to your interests. Why email you? Why email you? Because as an atheist, it bothers me that we are building a serious reputation as being a bunch of dicks. Yes, the movie sucked, but leave the absurd content out of it. Movie reviewers have no problem with a man growing into a three-story Green Hulk, but it's incomprehensible that a professor would intimidate a student. Fan service. It's what sells tickets. Patrick. Okay, here's where I understand what you're getting at. This film, God's Not Dead, exists in a world where the supernatural routinely plays out and is real. Very much like in the other religious-themed films, Ushpizin, which was very little seen, but it's an Orthodox Jewish film about the holiday of Sukkot.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who obey God in the film have God answer their... God answers their prayer at the end of the film. A literal answer to their prayer takes place at the end of the film. The same thing happens in that Mormon movie...
God's Army.
...called God's Army, where the Mormon missionaries pray to God, and a literal miracle takes place where a person who cannot walk walks at the end of the movie. Now, these, just like God's Not Dead, they take place in a universe where the supernatural can happen. So, in one way, he's right. These are very much like a superhero movie where people just are like, oh, well, superheroes exist, and Iron Man can make 100 suits zoom and save the day.
Right, but
I get that.
You're not supposed to go home and believe in Iron Man.
But, A, you're not supposed to go home and believe in Iron Man, like you just said, and B... The religious films don't cop to the fact that they exist in a world where the supernatural routinely plays out in everyday life. They don't. They cop.
They pass themselves off as realists.
They pass themselves off as like social realism, and this is clearly the world as everyone understands it. You know, we're not telling you anything that isn't true here. In these religious films. That's the message. So the fact that absurd content exists in some religious-themed films, I believe, is quite problematic because it leaves no room for the brain to function. This was Margot Martindale's complaint in Heaven is for Real, actually. Her character was complaining that they've turned the church into a haven for wacky people who don't need anything and from their brain to function. She says this. She goes, open your head and take your brain out. That's what these folks are doing in this film. And so I am going to keep disagreeing with you on this. I understand that on another level, yes, this is fan service, and I'm not supposed to even go see this movie as someone who doesn't want what they are selling. But when you present yourself as reality, I think you should...
There's a different standard involved.
Yeah, have a different standard than Iron Man.
I also want to point out that I don't think this guy's really an atheist, because he doesn't believe in global warming.
No. He said Al Gore tells only his side of the story. In Al Gore's defense, it's his side of the story and 99.9% of all scientists.
Yeah. I think this is like those guys that call the Stephanie Miller show and they say they're independent and they listen to a lot of different viewpoints and they're small business owners and then they rattle off all the right-wing talking points. So I think this is a guy's a stealth Christian who's like, oh, I'm an atheist too, but we don't need to be all blah, 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 blah,
also,
blah, blah,
concern-trolling. Once again, he assumes I'm an atheist.
Right, exactly.
Right.
But, yeah, I don't buy it.
Next letter. You are not the only people who do not like that piece of Jamie... Who do not like that piece of Jamie Babbitt. I get what he's doing here. He's talking about, but I'm a cheerleader.
Right.
This letter writer who actually wishes to remain anonymous.
Yes.
And the reason this person actually wishes to remain anonymous is because it's someone we know who's a big baby... Who doesn't have the balls
this
to
is, this is someone who
stand up for himself
who might
in
perhaps
public.
Get a job working as an actress or as a caterer or as a composer for a future Jamie Babbitt film and does not want to mess that up.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's the entire email. Yes.
Okay.
And at the end, in all caps, it says, I'm sending this to you anonymously, all caps. That means don't use my name, Dave White. Because that's how this person talks to me in real life all the time. You know that's true.
Well, at least this person's consistent.
This person that we're talking about is probably listening.
Yes.
And he needs a nice Hawaiian punch. That's what he needs.
Or she.
Or she.
Get her. Okay, is that it?
One more. Dear Alonzo and the freewheeling Dave White.
As if.
Let's bring that back. I am a longtime follower of both your written reviews and this podcast. Firstly, I have to mention an issue I had with a recent review of yours, Dave. Hmm. I, too, am a massive Muppets fan and appreciated your positive Muppets... I know where this is going. Your positive Muppets Most Wanted review on movies.com. However, I am resentful of your need to call out a Muppet Christmas Carol. I mean, come on. You couldn't have used Muppets from Space as the go-to crappy Muppets movie? I believe Christmas Carol is not only one of the most faithful adaptations of the book, but also provides that balance of emotion and zany humor that the Muppets are so good at. Other than the Muppet movie, I'd place Christmas Carol as my favorite Muppet film.
I think you read this letter before.
No.
Didn't you?
No.
Somebody else said all this about the Muppet movie? Okay.
Maybe I'm being a bit harsh, or maybe your problem, Dave, as Alonzo recently told his What the Flick co-hosts, is that you're dead inside. Other than this small setback, I love listening to this podcast, and I think your opinions are the most trustworthy in film criticism. That's also true.
Well, all right.
Moving on, here are my top 10 movies in no particular order. I found it difficult to narrow my list down to just 10, and I'm sure if you had asked me the next week, I would have given you a different list entirely. Number one is a tie, The Godfather and The Godfather Part 2.
I'll allow it.
Number two, Clockwork Orange. Mm-hmm. Number three, Magnolia. All right. Toy Story 3.
Yay.
Singing in the Rain.
Yes.
It's a Wonderful Life.
Sure.
Network.
Mm-hmm.
M.
Okay.
Goodfellas.
Yeah.
Grizzly Man.
Mm-hmm.
You're 97% knife.
You're going to knock off from Magnolia?
I'm knocking 3 points off from Magnolia. Just three. Like, I don't want to say you're only not, like, I don't want to say you don't get Magnolia. You right. can have Magnolia, because there's really great stuff in Magnolia.
Right.
There's just also just a lot of jive in Magnolia, too. Yeah. There you go. Thanks for all the entertainment and insight into what's good and bad in the cinema, except when you are wrong about A Muppet Christmas Carol. Keep up the good work. Sincerely, Zach. Thank you, Zach. You are 90%. You're 97%. You are 97% knife.
Nice. What else?
We're done. Goodbye.
Okay. Stop with that.
Goodbye.
No! Thank you to Blue for our amazing theme music, as always.
Goodbye, Blue.
You can check out his work at his website, blutopia.com, BLEUTOPIA.
Goodbye, Blue's website.
check out ChristyLemire.com. Go to...
oh, her.
Yes. Go to, if you're a serious XM listener, check out Matt Atchity and Gray Drake twice a week on Rotten Tomatoes Radio, and check out their brand new podcast, the Rotten Tomatoes Podcast. Right. You can now subscribe to it on iTunes.
Yes.
Also on Sirius XM, listen to The Frank DeCaro Show and yes. Derek and Romaine.
Goodbye, Romaine.
In the podcast universe, Dennis Hensley is back. The Comedy Couch is now called Dennis Anyone? And he
no,
has,
it is not.
It is. It is so. Tony may still make an occasional appearance, but it's a solo show.
That is the best and worst name. That's like the name of my favorite business, my favorite former, now no longer business in Los Angeles that used to be on La Cienega as you would drive south on La Cienega.
What's that?
The Merchant of Tennis.
Ah, yes.
With that great Mary Tyler Moore Show font that was painted on the building.
Yeah.
Because the building was painted in 1970.
That was a chain. We had one in Atlanta, too. The Merchant
Boy,
of Tennis.
The Merchant of Tennis. Tennis, anyone?
So, yeah, he's got a new episode with Jackie Clark, who's a very funny comedian. Let's see. Check out Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion cast, Team Jack, if he ever does a new episode.
He ain't going to do anything.
The B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney.
They aren't going to do anything either.
No, they
do a lot.
Three DVD commentaries are coming. As are
a whole bunch of a lot.
Bibbs' interviews with porn stars under what he's going to call the Blue Movie podcast.
Yeah.
Which my favorite line of late has been Whitney saying, so if you like porn stars but don't want to look at them...
That's a good one.
That's
Whitney.
A good one.
Good one, Whitney Seibel.
Yes. Check out The Schmoes Know, Film Spotting SVU, Pod Crash, The Game Night Guys, Secretly Timid, and The Lunch. You can subscribe to this program for
goodbye,
free
James Rocky.
At iTunes and leave us a review there. And some of you have been doing that lately, which has been lovely. It really helps people find the show. You can stream us at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com or on our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast. There's an app there that allows you to do it.
Yep.
You can follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. Check in at tvtag.com. Go to linoleum-knife.com, our website, where we have links
stuff
to our reviews elsewhere and this program and some original material every so often when we get around to doing it. And drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with questions, comments, top 10 lists, worst 10 lists. You can also PayPal us $1.99 at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
Extra episodes.
Yeah.
Linoleum Knife presents More Linoleum Knife. We focus on a movie. We talk about that movie entirely, only that movie, for the entire running time of that movie.
You could watch it while you're watching the film on DVD or streaming, or could, just listen to it on the tube. Either way.
We did The Apple, and we did Clue.
Yes.
And the next one we're going to do is Stanley Donen's Two for the Road.
We'll be taping that next week, and we'll let you know when it goes live. But if you want to get the ones we've already got, like I said,
give us that money.
PayPal us $1.99 each. Send it to PayPal to linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Let us know which ones you're purchasing and the email address to which you would like it sent. And once again, thanks to The Real Truth by Reed Martin and the No Budget Film School for sponsoring this program.
NoBudgetFilmSchool.com.
And again, our programming.
Goodbye, No Budget Film School.
I will be in Dallas.
Goodbye, Reed Martin.
I will be in Dallas for the USA Film Festival. So next week's episode will not post
It'll
until
happen on Monday.
Monday. So
we're going to record it on Monday. It's going to go up on Monday. You're going to hear it on Monday.
If you're that OCD listener that spends a Sunday clicking refresh that wrote us one time, don't do it.
Give yourself the day off.
Yes.
Yeah.
Take a walk or something. Anyway, we thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Now you actually get to say it.
Ah, goodbye.